The number of American workers filing for jobless benefits last week fell to a five-decade low. We have jobs. It is a remarkable turnaround for an economy teetering on the brink just a year ago. So let's look back at the U.S. economy in 2021 and what may be in store for next year as Omicron comes. And for that, we have Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton. Diane, welcome back.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So can we spin back to about this time last year? Now, in my house, nobody had a vaccine yet. I bought a bike instead of perhaps a gym membership. What did the economy, especially for American families, look like as 2021 began?
You know, it's amazing how short-lived many people's memory is, and I know the pandemic has a way of sort of making everything all blur together, but yeah. It was really a pretty dire situation back in December of 2020. The good news was the hope on the horizon of vaccines, but at the same time, we were in the midst of a winter wave, and we actually saw the economy threaten to go into a double-dip recession. And if not for what was passed and then signed, the support package of $600 billion on December 27th by the previous president, we would have likely fallen into a double-dip recession because of the losses that we are experiencing. Remember, many people's supplements to unemployment insurance expired back in August, and so they were really running on fumes by the time they got to the end of the year. Food lines were getting much longer, and people who had never had to go and get food to get through the holiday season were doing so. So it really was a very different time, and the economy was still struggling to recover.
So then as we got into, say, the first half of 2021, how important was government spending as a big engine to keep the economy going? Many more Americans, as you're saying, they continue to get stimulus checks. They continue to get the expanded unemployment benefits.
Yes, we saw the child tax credits later in the year. We saw additional stimulus checks. All of that was important. It wasn't as well targeted as we'd like as an economist, but you know, we did see once people could get out and step out again, the economy sort of roared. It was absolutely stunning to see the growth in the first half of 2021. It was a really remarkable recovery. And as we got into the summer.
I remember.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Now, we were hopeful. My kids getting ready to go back to in-person school and things.
Yes.
Seems like a long time ago, things looked really good.
They did. And then we had that Delta wave, and Delta was a game changer, both in the U.S. and globally. And fear of contagion is real. And that's what we're starting to experience now, is this fear and a pullback. I mean, the fourth quarter will come in as likely the strongest quarter of the whole year. But, you know, much of the weakness that we're seeing in response to the fear of contagion, that will spill into the early part of next year. I think we're in a better place with the tools we have. But once you overwhelm hospitals, you still have real economic effects. And the fact that people aren't going out to theaters again, people are not going out to restaurants like they did, you know, those kinds of behaviors do dampen the economy. We're in better position to weather the storm this time, but we still have a lot of things that are really hard, especially for lowest income households, because they lose the child tax credit. The last check went out December 15th.
Right. And I guess what is your sense of the reality for some of those households now? We have no idea, you know, if a next big long-term or short-term stimulus is coming from Congress. And as you're saying, for a lot of these families, this important government support is ending or has ended.
Yeah, it's really important because there's a lot of reasons why we got inflation, and inflation is also hard on these households. We also had climate issues affecting us that people don't realize, the collision between climate change and COVID. The fact that Texas lights went out in February 2021, two major chip plants were in Texas that, you know, took overnight to shut them down, took months to ramp them back up, and that affected the auto industry. So, you know, you don't want demand to be destroyed enough at this point in time that inflation becomes non-existent, because that would actually be a really big destruction in demand. We want enough demand and enough savings to carry us, and hopefully still enough hiring to not go negative. And we've got better tools to stay open on a lot of different fronts if we mask and get boosted. And that's the good news. But nonetheless, those workers that were affected the hardest, my guess is by January, they're going to see a slowdown in the wage gains that they'd seen so rapid. And that's hard.
Yeah. Can I ask you a little bit more about consumer demand in general? Going into this year, so many Americans had money saved up and demand was really sizzling. But is that demand potentially going to really come down significantly?
Well, that's what we don't know. The chances are probably not. And that's because of the remarkable ability to be able to work remote. So if you're in a position to be able to work remote, you probably do have quite a cushion on savings. But then you get into issues of inequality. And one of the things we know was when the child tax credits went into effect in July, hunger among the poorest children went down dramatically. And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So we built bridges to bridge COVID-tainted waters, but they weren't long enough. And I think that's the hardest part of what we're dealing with right now, is that even mildly being sick is first being pretty sick. And second, it still means you can't get to work. And that's important for a lot of households that need to actually show up at work.
Speaking of workers, how do you think about the outlook for wages? We had this great resignation in 2021, a lot of people leaving their jobs for different reasons. If workers remain in hot demand, will they likely continue to see hefty growth in their paychecks?
First of all, the demand for workers is so far outstripped in supply, and part of the supply's constraints are everything from, you know, it wasn't a resignation as much as a retirement. 90% of the loss in workers between 2019 November and 2021 November were retirees. People not coming back. And maybe they will. We'll see. But what's interesting, too, is also the quit rates were highest among low-wage jobs. And some of that was to get better wages. Some of it was to get more flexible work schedules, given the need for child care. People lost grandparents who took care of their children. They lost primary income earners, and they had to juggle these, you know, sort of on-again, off-again school schedules, and that was difficult. And so that's where we saw a lot of wage increases and a lot of the highest quit rates. It's sort of a nice narrative to say everybody went out and, yes, they're looking for remote work, but they actually really just got another job in the same area they're in. That's important to remember as well, is it's not just people giving up on a career. And, you know, it makes for a colorful story, but it's not what the data is actually telling us.
So I guess going forward into 2022, we've heard so much about this bifurcated American economy for those who can work from home and do well and save up money and keep working, keep buying things, you know, maybe life stays okay. And for many other Americans, it is a different reality, and we'll same version of that movie next year?
I hope not. I hope we get through this after a very hard first quarter and we can morph from a pandemic into an endemic. That does require the world getting access to vaccines. We are getting better at treatments as well. All those things are encouraging. We have to lever the full basket of tools we have to get to a more normal world. What I worry about on the other side of it is that the fatality rates and long-haul COVID leave scars as well. And I do worry about some of the inequality persisting instead of unwinding as it looked like it was maybe about to do. And I think we need to be very intentional not to allow the situation that we've seen for low-wage workers to simply go away, because they had a moment in the sun after being in the shadows. You know, the fact that a million fewer workers today are working multiple jobs than they were in February 2020 is more a testimony to how bad it was in the best of times in the last expansion for too many workers than how good it is today.
Finally, as far as forecasts go, you and many economists think 2021 will end up growing at 5.7% or so. I mean, a really healthy number.
Yeah, and strongest since 1984, pretty much.
Wow. How confident are economists in forecasting 2022? You know, one of my friends in primary care, who happens to be my wife, says, you know what, the virus is smarter than us.
Yes, and humility serves you well. I often said forecasting during the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009 was like standing on fault lines. You could never get your footing. This is like standing in quicksand. Every time you think you have a tether out, you get another wave of infections. And the one thing that people continue to underestimate is how much pandemics tend to sow mistrust in institutions, mistrust in those who want to suppress the virus. But this is not new. We've seen science evolve faster than we have as people, and we need to adjust for that. You know, I've written a lot about it, Groundhog Day. This feels like Groundhog Day. Well, Bill Murray didn't escape February 2nd and move into February 3rd till he saw each day as an opportunity to improve himself and the lives of those around him. And that really is a good metaphor for where we're at, because that's how we get out of this.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at Grant Thornton. Diane, always good to talk to you. Thank you and Happy New Year.
You too. Thank you.